Next in Nonprofits. I'm Steve Boland, and I am very pleased to be joined today by Matt Nash, the Executive Director of the Blackbaud Giving Fund. Matt, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I look forward to it.
I was connected with you to talk a little bit about how your work intersects with some engagement tools, some volunteer connections, people that might even be using donor advised tools. We got a lot of things that we could help people understand and talk about. But before we dive into any of those things, can you sort of help people understand Blackbaud as a larger effort and your role with the Blackbaud Giving Fund?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Well, Blackbaud is a very big presence in the nonprofit sector. We provide systems and tools to help nonprofits manage their business, anything from accounting systems to fundraising systems to donor relationship management systems, all representing a sort of an ecosystem that allows nonprofits to take advantage of the technology so that they can focus on the causes that they're supporting and use really good tools to help them do that. Now, also, one of the things that Blackbaud has is a corporate offering that we call workplace giving, and that's where the Blackbaud Giving Fund mostly comes in, where corporations will bring the Blackbaud software into their organization, and that allows their employees to go online, sign up to volunteer for an activity, or give to a particular charity. And the funds that are coming in from the giving through the payroll deductions, credit card giving, corporate matches, and even the corporate foundation all come into the Blackbaud Giving Fund. And then we disperse out those funds to the charities that these employees and the corporations request.
So how many employer type organizations do you work with? And do they tend to be larger employers that want to use that service? Or what does your profile of a company look like?
It's quite a broad range. I would say that it primarily is what I'll call medium-sized firms, in the say called 1,000 to 5,000 employees, all the way up through, very large globally based firms. So a lot of it depends on the perspective that the corporation has, how important it is for getting their employees engaged in a social activity, social good activity. A statistic that I often use is that 70% of employees want to work for a firm that has a social good agenda. And so that represents a huge sort of market of employees. Mm-hmm. And companies want their employees to be happy. And so it represents an opportunity for them to provide those features for employees to use.
So as a charity that might be interested in connecting with those employees and lots of ways to engage with them, certainly as donors, but as volunteers or other community service opportunities or things like that, how do charities start to connect into the Giving Fund to be part of that ecosystem of connecting people to charitable missions?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it gets to, I think, a number of different kinds of opportunities that nonprofits have to connect with donors that from the nonprofit's perspective might feel a little opaque and difficult to achieve. Well, workplace giving is one. What I'll call a standard donor advised fund is another one. And Steve, it might be good for us to take each of those in its own separate category because I think they're slightly different. Sure. Well, let's start with the workplace. What I have found is we've looked into, what makes a really strong connection between a corporate program and its nonprofits is just that, a partnership. The people that run these programs in corporations, they're typically somebody that's in charge of their corporate social responsibility program, might come in a number of different departments within the company, but their main job is to provide volunteer activities and giving activities for their employees. And that can be anywhere from a very targeted, thing that they work on that's very tightly connected to the mission of their company, all the way through to, we just want our employees to be able to be engaged and volunteer and give to whatever charity is important to them. And so it can look very much like a random act that happens when a nonprofit receives a check from the Blackbaud Giving Fund. In fact, I receive maybe two or three phone calls a week from somebody who says, "Hey, I have this check from you. Can you tell me what it's all about and you know, how it got to me and who are you," and those kinds of things, you know. But it comes down to a couple of key points. One is, a lot of times giving that occurs in the workplace is done very locally. So a company has operations in a particular city. They roll out these programs. Most giving, I think, as you probably know, is done locally anyway. And so the employees are looking for ways to use this tool, and particularly the company match that comes along with it, so it amplifies their giving, to give to the charities that they think are important in their local community. So if you're a nonprofit, a small or medium-sized nonprofit, and you begin to see checks come in from, you know, the Blackbaud Giving Fund or the America Online Giving Foundation or Network for Good, those are all donor advised funds that are behind the corporations that are providing these services to these employees. So for Blackbaud, the Blackbaud Giving Fund is the charitable entity that provides these funds. So the charity will end up receiving a check or an automatic, you know, electronic payment coming from the Blackbaud Giving Fund. And behind that are employees that give. And each of these organizations offer a platform that the charity can sign up for and register for. It's fairly simple to do. And once you do that, then when the information comes through in terms of, "Hey, I just received this $2,500 check from the Blackbaud Giving Fund," the charity is able to look it up and says, "That comes from company ABC, and there were 15 employees in there, and one of them is Matt Nash, and here's his email address." And so it provides an opportunity for the charity to recognize potentially new donors. Those new donors are relatively intentional about it because they went through this process to pick that charity out, and the contact information is there so you can reach out to them and begin the stewardship activities that any good nonprofit would do.
But this is, as we're starting to kind of drift into the donor advised fund question, I think one of the bigger challenges folks experience is that thing you just described of check arrives, and we did not have a understood relationship every single time a check arrives. Sometimes we do with the donor, and you call the 800 number on the check and go, "This is fantastic. Who is this donor advisor out there that we can thank and engage with and steward and all these great things?" And sometimes the answer is that person prefers not to give you that information. So is it always the case with the Giving Fund that donor information is available because of how you've set up, or are there times when donors may choose to remain anonymous and support the work that way?
You said it well at the very end there. It's the donor chooses.
Yeah.
And they have to choose to be anonymous. Our default is that their information is known. And I think that's an important characteristic, because all human behavior is mostly based on momentum. And you know, and so for somebody to be intentional about saying, "I'm going to be anonymous," they have to think through and say, "Yes, that's important for me to be anonymous." And we find that very few of our employees put themselves down as anonymous. And in fact, in donor advised funds overall, the statistics are that about 4% of donors actually are anonymous, meaning that you don't know who they are. And that equates to about a little over 8% of the dollars. But the study that I saw recently to confirm that said that the dollar amount was mostly impacted by very large grants, like a
right,
you know, eight figure type, $10 million and up grants, which would skew that the dollar percent. So I've always observed, when I was at Fidelity Charitable, which is where I was before Blackbaud Giving Fund, when I'm here, as I've talked to my colleagues in the industry over the last 10 years, it is very clear that it's a myth that donor advised fund donors don't tell the nonprofits who they are.
Well, as often. I mean, it does happen. And of course, regular donations can come in anonymously using tools that are not donor advised funds. There's
True.
other ways people that prefer not to have their name shared can make those gifts. There's lots of ways that can happen.
Right.
Even as simple as many online giving platforms these days will have that box to check and allow a donor to make a contribution without necessarily sharing their contact information with the organization. I have a quick technical question for you about kind of differentiating some of this giving from other ways people may be thinking about donor advised funds. And then I want to get into the more meaty engagement with people who may be donors at the start, or maybe come in through the a volunteer or community engagement door and then think to become donors. There's a lot of things to talk about there, but I want to understand what Blackbaud Giving Fund and some of these others are doing that makes it a donor advised fund versus, you know, we're just a payment processor, right? We're somebody that takes in gifts from employees and we repurpose them exactly as they go out. There are community foundations that have donor advised capabilities where those gifts can be made. And again, the donor advisor can request a gift be made. And unless there is some really good reason not to make that gift, it's almost certainly going to get made that way. But it's not the same thing as a strict pass-through of we're just the payment processor. We're just making the employment thing easy. So how do you differentiate a donor-advised fund from, you know, any kind of, you know, Blackbaud CRM product that does electronic payment processing for you?
Yeah. I tend to think about it as being there's two types of these vehicles. They're all controlled by the same rules and regulations from the IRS, meaning that they're donor advised fund regulations. And the difference is that somebody like the Blackbaud Giving Fund, which is supporting a program, you know, in workplace giving, is more of what I call a transaction donor advised fund. And the value that it's providing is less about the, you know, growth of the assets in the account and things that you get with organizations like Fidelity or Schwab or a community foundation. And it's more helping the organization that we work with, in this case, the corporation, to assure that the funds are indeed charitable. So a lot of the work that we do is all around the compliance side of things, making sure that the charity is a legitimate charity from the IRS regulation standpoint, so that the company doesn't have to worry about that, that the purpose of the grant is for legitimate charitable purposes. Therefore, the company doesn't have to worry about making sure that their employees are sending funds for the right purpose. So all of those activities, they are done in a donor advised fund sponsor, whether you're a Fidelity or you're a Blackbaud Giving Fund. But the Blackbaud Giving Fund side of it, meaning these transaction donor advised funds, that's the main value that they're adding to the process. They're just assuring that organizations are all performing in an appropriate manner. And then people like the legal counsel and these major corporations don't have to worry that their organization is going to be in the news having supported some nefarious organization, right? That's the risk side of things for organizations like that are really high. So that's the value that they see in what we do.
But in general, with this employment stuff, if an employee says, I want to make a contribution this year to these five charities, I'd like it deducted out of my paycheck or however else I'm going to put my portion of that money in. Maybe the employer matches it, maybe not, but it generally happens within the year that those donations are made, as opposed to I go to my community foundation and say, I want to start a donor advised fund. And maybe I want to give a little bit of money this year, but I want to give more that might be available to give later. And I might ask you to direct that money at a later date, and it would sit with the donor advisor. I assume from what I'm understanding about more employment-based things that probably people aren't banking lots of gifts to make later. Is that true or is that not right?
You are correct. That is absolutely true. They can define the giving either through their payroll deduction, and that can be a one-time thing, or every payroll period. And when the funds come in, then the company is simultaneously providing the whatever match that they have according to their policies. And then those funds come together into one payment that we then make to the charity. So the way I look at this is the advantage of a workplace giving is really the amplification of the company match. And we just make that really simple for our employees to do so that the charity ends up getting a higher donation amount than they would if the employee was just simply writing out a check or sending a credit card donation in. Whereas if you're in a community foundation or you're with a national donor advised fund sponsor, it's a different model because the donor is running everything. It's their own personal account that they're operating, and their purpose is to give both now and to sustain giving in the future, which is why they'll leave some funds in there and invest it in ways that hopefully it grows according to the way the market is, so they can give more money as they age, and particularly as they get into retirement. And their income might not be as high, they still have quite a bit of funds that they can continue to give and support the charities that are important to them.
Yeah. So I think it's good to have that definition of, this isn't a family foundation that's incorporated separately with its own employer identification number, because of course people still do that. And if they have a bunch of resources and they really want to manage the growth of them and hire staff and have all that stuff happening, that's a path, and we know how to go do that. But for these other folks that may want to think about a legacy of giving over a period of time that might continue for some period of time, but they don't want to have to go through all that, so they can engage in an agreement with, you know, a Fidelity Charitable or a Minneapolis Foundation or whoever in the world makes that service available to them. Generally, those service providers have some kind of fee arrangement based on how much is invested. They get some money to pay those costs, but it's different for that donor advisor who could then come in with a relatively small amount compared to large, large foundations that actually incorporate and still choose to give in a kind of family foundation sort of way, without having to necessarily go to all the trouble of having a board of directors and annual meetings and all the stuff.
Right. And it can come down to, you even mentioned it, there are, you know, many of these organizations that don't even have a minimum anymore. So you could set up an account with some of these groups with $500 and start from there. And then it can build over time. What I see is that the typical donor advisor in this model that is what I'll call more the retail model is, you know, they're in their early 50s when they start. They might have $25,000 in it because they put a couple of bonuses or portions of a bonus check from their, you know, their employment into there to get it started and get it moving. And then as time goes on, they're able to add assets to it based on, you know, their financial situation. And it grows based on however they're investing it. And then they can give over time, and they have assets set aside to give. And that's why I always say that those donors, if there's anything different about them than your standard donor, is that they're more intentional. They purposely set up this account to do this. So they want to give to charities. They're purposely thinking about, you know, adding to it over time and having it grow so they can support the charities that are important to them throughout their lifetime. And it's assets that they've got that are already been, the, you know, given to a charity, because that's what a donor advised fund is. So they've taken the charitable deduction for it. And when they spend those funds, it doesn't impact their disposable income at all,
right?
Because it's already done. They, you know, they gave it away, you know, however long ago, and now they're just simply giving it to a charity.
So a lot of folks, once they've set that mechanism up, it maybe becomes their preferred way to give. It, of course, is not the only way. Sometimes, you know, they may just, especially the more casual gift, you know, if somebody's doing a crowdfunding campaign and they're looking for $100, I might not go to my donor advised fund and request a disbursement and whatnot. I might just, you know, go to a credit card and debit it out of my bank account and be done with it. And there's no necessarily one way of saying that these cash donors over here don't have access to donor advised funds, or that these donor advised funds might not give in a different way. But it does get to the main thrust of this conversation about connecting with these donor advisors and others, so that as you get to know them and they're choosing to engage with you more, you might understand better, we're going to anticipate an annual gift from a donor advised fund, and there might be some small giving at events, you know, throughout the year differently or whatever. But now it's that, how do we engage with this community of people so that when they are making those intentional decisions, they're thinking about our mission, our work, as where they're making those intentional gifts. And here's where I think sometimes charities, especially growing and emerging ones, maybe don't always do the best job of trying to find that engagement and stewardship thing when the first check might have come from an employer-based fund or a donor advised fund at a community foundation or something, that they may not be thinking, how do I step up my connection with that donor? And I know that that's something that you're pretty passionate about. I'd love you to kind of talk a little bit about that part of it.
Sure, I'd love to. You know, as we've already talked, I've used this word intentional. I think that's really the key. You know, so if you're a nonprofit and you're receiving a funds from a local community foundation, and it has, you know, the name Matt Nash on it, you know, that person has decided to give to you. And so therefore you basically won already as a nonprofit, right? you've got them. And the key is to keep them and to recognize them for who they are and really why are they using this vehicle to help support you. And there's some nuances there that become important. And it really changes the dynamic from, hey, this nonprofit really gets me. I'm invested in them. They're helping me understand what they're doing, and I'm helping them be more successful. And that's really that's the purpose of any kind of fundraising and stewardship activity that a nonprofit has, right? And so the key is for the nonprofit to better understand a little bit of the motivators behind what's happening here, and then a little bit more maybe about the mechanics, because the mechanics can get in the way.
Yeah.
And why I say that is that there's just a couple of things about donor advised funds, given the rules that people live under, that make it somewhat more complicated. And the number one is that a donor cannot receive a benefit from a gift given through a donor advised fund. Now that on the surface sounds really simple, but when you get into it, it does come across a lot of sand in the gears when it comes to normal fundraising. So imagine the gala or the auction, right? We've all been to them. You bring your credit card and you bid on an auction item. And if you win the bid, then the company or the nonprofit will take the credit card information and you've paid for it and away you go. Well, the problem is that if you won that mountain retreat week, that was the, you know, end of the night auction item, you can't use the donor advised fund for that because staying in that mountain retreat for that week is a benefit. And so if a charity is running a program like that, you know, an auction, you have to be able to communicate to the donor advised fund donor to say, look, I'm not, number one, I'm not going to ask you to use the donor advised fund to pay for the entrance to the gala or pay for the thing that you won in the auction. That's separate. But at the end of the night, I'm going to be asking, and does anybody want to give other funds? You know, who wants to give $100, $500, $1,000? And when the people are going around to you know, grab the folks and get their information as they raise their paddle, there should be a way to just say, if you have a donor advised fund, let's take that information now and we'll take care of it right here. And that way the person attending that event has done the right thing by paying for the event through their own funds and then giving to the charity over and above what happened at the event with their donor advised fund. It's simple. But unless you understand it, you can easily make a mistake and look like you don't know what you're doing as a nonprofit by asking the donor advised fund donor to do things with their donor advised fund that are not allowed.
Okay. But we do want to engage them in those event-based things and have them, you know, meet people and connect and all the rest of it. So we just have to understand the role of their different giving mechanisms when you're doing that. Because, you know, thanking them for the donor advised gift that came through their employer is wonderful, and we want that. But if we're going to build a longer-term, more meaningful relationship with them, you know, at some point we're probably going to want to meet with them in person, whether it's at a big event or a one-on-one. How do you think about helping people kind of build those connections? Is event-based opportunities look like a good starting place, or do you see other ways of doing that?
The donor advised fund donor, one of the most important things for them is to get to know the nonprofit more, to understand what they're doing, to learn about how sophisticated they are and the great work that they do. A great way to do that is to invite them to these activities. So there's where the challenge is, right? So you have to think about, okay, if I'm having these kind of donors come and they're supporting me through mechanisms that are not just directly through their banking system, then all we need to make sure we set it up so that they can enjoy themselves at the event, that they can get to know all the great work we're doing, they can have fun at the auction, but also we will approach them in a way that says, hey, you can just tonight, if you want to give through your donor advised fund, here's how you do it. Make it simple for them, and then it's a great experience, and then it's even better for the nonprofit, because the donor came, they enjoyed what happened, they learned more, they got to know other donors, and then they recognize that the nonprofit knows how they give and dealt with them in an appropriate manner.
Yeah. So I think meeting some of these folks in the first place can be challenging. I mean, any donor acquisition is just a consistent concern for almost any charity out there. There's going to be some levels of attrition no matter what you do. And certainly we want to be stewarding and maintaining relationships with donors that will continue to support us first. But there's going to be a need to meet that next person who may choose to give this way. And they're not always, you know, as easy to see as somebody who might have dropped a check in the mail or made some other more obvious connection with the organization. So as you think about the work that you do in supporting these employee-based pieces and how they give, how do you think about introductions when people haven't made the decision yet that this is an important charity to them and they, you know, need to make some way of making the case? You know, before we started recording, you kind of talked a little bit about this being more of a marketing problem than anything else.
Right. I think the number one mistake a nonprofit can make is, hey, I'm getting these funds from a donor advised fund. I'll call that donor advised fund sponsor, or I'll call that community foundation and see how I can get grants from them. You know, that just is not the way it works. And what I describe is, I call it a marketing problem. It's a retail marketing problem. Those donors are no different than donors that give through all kinds of different methods. There are people who are out there that have the means to be able to support a charity, have the desire to support a cause, because, you know, a lot of times they felt like that they've been lucky in their lives and they'd like to give back and support others who haven't been so lucky. And so it becomes, you know, this classic needle in a haystack, right? And the way I look at it, I think there's a few layers that are important to go through. And the first one is to look at your own systems and try to understand whether you've got donor advised funds in there already. That's step one. And the first step on that is, there's a way that nonprofits, in terms of how they categorize the donors and these systems that they use to, you know, indicate down that, you know, donor A gave this many dollars over this period of time. It's called soft credit or hard credit. And a hard credit is the actual organization that should be getting the deduction, or the actual person that should be getting the deduction for the donation. And a soft credit, it would be somebody else who's behind that donation. And a lot of times the nonprofits get confused on these things. And so a donor advised fund donor comes in and they give the money. It came through Fidelity Charitable, and the charity wants to give a receipt to Fidelity Charitable for that that donation, right? When in fact it was, and which is fine because that's, you know, Fidelity Charitable is the hard credit on that, but what they're not recognizing is that there was a Matt Nash charitable fund, and he gave his name and address in that transaction, and we should track him, right? We have to track the actual donor that's behind the donor advised fund. And a lot, especially in the early days, that was a huge mistake that a lot of nonprofits made. And it's been over the years, it's been getting better and better. And in fact, I was telling somebody the other day that, you know, I have about, 10 charities or so that are my core charities that I give to every year. And this was the first year that they got the soft credit, hard credit right on every single charity. And so that's step one, because then you know it was a donor advised fund that gave you the actual money, but behind it is the donor that you really want to steward and get to know. So that's step one. Then step two is how to be able to take in the funds that these folks have available to them. So a lot of times what happens is that a donor will have some assets that they want to give. It could be stock, it could be shares in a private company, it could be real estate, those kinds of things that they're thinking about turning into charitable funds. And all that activity is really done more with the financial advisor, but it's important for the nonprofit to understand that those things can happen and that they don't have to receive these complex assets. They can work through others to get those assets turned into cash, which then can be received by the nonprofit. And so a lot of times, particularly on a little bit upper end of donations, if a nonprofit is working with, say, a major gift donor, and the major gift donor says, "Hey, I'm getting a large stock option payout coming up in a couple months," then the nonprofit should understand conceptually that they have to work with a financial advisor to make that happen. It might go into a donor advised fund, and the gift will come through the donor advised fund. So there's some understanding of the process and the systems that occur in the donation that are critical. Also in this case,
I'll say that I've run into more than a few times where people want to send a tax receipt to a soft credit donor, and there really needs to be an understanding that, right, you're treating that person as if they directly gave you that money, because, you know, it's an important recognition of the relationship, but the understanding how that's flowing is important, that you don't end up sending them a tax receipt for something that actually was a tax gift to, you know, their donor advised employer fund or some other place, not you. So that thank you is not the same thing as a tax receipt.
Right. And therefore it should just be, in this case, in your example, a thank you. You know, we really appreciate you supporting us through your donor advised fund. If you want to mention that, that's helpful, because I think that it was a point that that the donor recognizes that you know how they're donating to you. And it's perfectly legitimate and should be done to thank that donor for the donation, but it's not appropriate to give them a tax receipt for it. It's not harmful, but it just gives a signal to that donor that you're not understanding the tool that they're using to give to you.
Right. So we're starting to run a little low on time, and I do want to talk a little bit more about this. How do we leverage engagement for some folks that are already understanding the mission to maybe others that would use the same tool? Maybe they work at the same place of employment and they could be using that same employer match to give, or what other commonalities there may be. But I think leveraging those peer relationships towards additional engagement with potential donors is something we don't do enough of. And I don't know how you see this play out in some of your work, that as some employees are giving, do they connect with other peers? Do they share that? Do the charities encourage them to do that? How do you see reaching new audiences when they do have that commonality of, we work in the same place, we use the same tool to give, or something like that?
Yeah, I think there's a few things that can be thought through there. The simplest thing is, you know, referrals really work, right? So if you're getting a lot of donations coming in from, let's say, a set of donors through a community foundation, because now that's local. They're a great group of folks to reach out to and say, hey, you know, we know that you've been giving to us. Do you have any other, you know, individuals you would know that might be interested in our cause? We would like to invite them to, you know, whatever event that you're having to help introduce them. That's a really good sort of next step, or, you know, the next layer out from the core of your donors that could be a valuable kind of activity to go on, because again, they're similar, right? They're if it's a community foundation, they're supporting local causes. There are people who think alike in terms of wanting to support their cause. If they know others that might be interested in the kind of work that you're supporting, it's a social thing to bring them in to experience that. And so it works just like any other kind of business referral if you're a salesperson selling any kind of product. So I think that's an important way of thinking about it. And I think that actually, Steve, expands to thinking about marketing more broadly. You know, some nonprofits are being pretty effective with digital marketing strategies that really don't cost a lot of money. You can set up, you know, ads in Google and Meta, which is, you know, Facebook and Instagram, that are very targeted. So let's say that you see that there's, you know, a number of people from community foundations in your area that are giving to you, that if you look at your donor advised fund donors, that many of them are in your local community, or you're finding that employees are giving to you through their workplace because they work in the local operations, you could actually begin putting into Google and Meta in messages about who you are and what you do and how it works and what kind of great outcomes you've been able to have. And those things can be tracked all the way through to seeing them hit your website and hit the donate button on it. So you can actually learn about how effective those tools can be to bring in new donors to you. So it's something that, you know, a mid-sized nonprofit or even a small one with some help from, you know, somebody that's a digital marketing kind of person could begin to set up. And you're just expanding from your core. You know, you look at where your donors are today and who they are, and then you can really highly target those ad activities. And it does begin to get interest, and it gives you a chance to talk about your message, who you are, what you do, the impact that you're having. And those are all important things for these people who are intentional givers.
Yeah. I do wish we had a little bit more time on that topic. There's so much to share on it, but unfortunately we are just about out of time here completely. So as you're thinking about that more mid-sized organization that maybe hasn't done a lot yet in really trying to understand or pursue people that may be using these tools to connect, is there a first starting place you can point them to say, here's a great way to begin evaluating how your strategy works to connect to people that are using these ways to give?
I tell people all the time, start with who you've got. Look in your current database. Identify the donations you're getting through these sponsors, the community foundations, the national ones, maybe single issue donor advised funds if your cause is in line with some of these single issue organizations. They're in your database today. And the first thing to do is make sure that you got the soft credit, hard credit thing right. And then from there, begin communicating with them so that they know that you know how donor advised funds work. And make sure that your language is the right kind of language. So for instance, you know, don't talk about plan giving and bequests. Talk about, have you set up a successor in your donor advised fund account? Because that's the way that they think about it. Don't talk about it in terms of sustained giving per se. You would say, have you set up your account to schedule grants to us on a recurring basis. So organize your team. If people think, if you got a different person going after large gifts, mid-size and smaller, make sure that they all understand the language that you're using for donor advised funds and you're communicating with these folks in a common way. That is a really good first step.
Outstanding. Well, I do wish, Matt, that we had a load more time to talk about so many more things that are impactful for charitable missions and how this works. But unfortunately, we are out for now. So we will have links in the show notes to the Blackbaud Giving Fund for people that want to learn more about that directly. So I encourage people to click through to the show notes, see more about how you can continue to learn more here. So Matt Nash is the executive director of the Blackbaud Giving Fund. Matt, thanks again for taking the time today.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Steve.